Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everybody. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director here at cybered.io. And today on our episode, I'm pleased to have both Sam Curry, who's the CISO at Zscaler, along with his brother, Red Curry, who is the CMO at Tautuk. And we're in a sort of a continuing series here of push and pull around a bunch of topics of everything that's going on that would affect the mind map, if you will, of a CISO or somebody that's involved in the cybersecurity business. And in fact, I guess all of us who are now bona fide card-carrying owners of the digital age. I mean, there's nobody that I know of, including my grandnieces and nephews, who don't have both opportunity and responsibility given the world that we live in. So our objective here, our goal here between Red and Sam and I is to kind of lay it out from our point of view. We've had a few rodeos and terrain hasn't changed much. We think we know why those things are. We want to share some of our thoughts about that. And that's the whole purpose of this series on the CyberEd Network. So without further ado, let's get going. First question I have for us is, what kind of people do cybersecurity for a living?
The best and the worst.
The thing is, I think we all came at it differently, and I think it varies by generation. I get asked sometimes, so how do I get to do the job you're doing? And I used to say, don't do what I did because the start conditions were different. And now I'm starting to think maybe we're back to a time, or now we're back to a place where it's more like when I started. There's more ways to get in. Because I think we went through a phase where folks felt that there was gatekeeping going on, and there may have been, but there was also a sort of, there's a formula. You got to take this degree or this certificate and go through these channels. And I think we're starting to realize there's more ways to get into it, and we need more types of people in it. I think there's rebels in it. I'm thinking of our friend Hector Red. There's also people who naturally defend things. I found a lot of people who have been the victim of abuse, the victim of bullying, and, you know, some of them become bullies, and some of them really take it personally and don't want that to happen anymore. Red, what's your take?
You know, it's really awesome because I got into cybersecurity because of Sam. I was...
Because I bullied you is what it was.
He beat me up. He was a horrible brother. I remember I was working as a pet toy costume clothing and furniture designer for.
I used to tease you about that. Well, actually, you were funny about the thing. Like, what he thought a dog and brushing out personal bits and
And it was a great job. It was a great company. Pet Edge, which supplied pet supply. They manufactured these goods.
But it's amazing how much you had to change the way animals looked for humans to consume it. Yeah.
But I'm going to back up a little bit. Steve, I'm going to back up a little because my story is kind of interesting and I'm going to bore you with it for a second. So I worked at a gas station until I was 23 years old. And then I had odd jobs. I was told I would never go to college. I was told I would never get a degree and that I was good for the services. And one day my brother Sam said to me, "So that's it? You're just going to give up? That's what you're going to do, buddy?" And I said, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" So on a $100 bet, he said, "Well, go to UMass and ask if you can go there." And I said, there's no way they're going to let me in. No transcripts, no SATs, nothing. Now, that's the problem. And this is answering your question, is what type of people go into any profession. I think I took that challenge. I got that degree. I graduated with...
Last $100 I ever spent. Yeah.
That's $100. I graduated. I got a job as a web designer, a graphic designer. And then I was told I'd never be in product marketing. Challenge accepted. Sam's like, "Bullshit, you could absolutely do that. There's no freaking way you can't, buddy." So at least of all, leaving the retail, Sam, you're at that retail.
I'm actually at the retail and hospitality ISAC right now, so it's kind of funny.
But then I joined this wonderful company called Mettler Toledo, which is a big analytical instrumentation. They analyze everything from a grain of pollen to a planet, right? They can measure and weigh anything. So I joined a technical company, and I became product marketing. And I jumped into it. I learned to write, and I learned to speak, and I learned to communicate. And I realized Sam's message of, you can be anything you want to be if you're given the opportunity. And then I was the victim of a breach. Thank you, TJX, back in the early 2000s. And I called Sam at RSA and go, what do you guys even do? And he goes, Red, we can use more people to tell stories in marketing. We need more people in sales. We need more people in engineering and in product and in HR and in finance. And he said, if we get all these good people from all different walks of life, we could craft amazing stories to communicate to the mothers, the brothers, the sisters, the uncles, the cousins, the girlfriends, the boyfriends, the husbands, the wives. Everybody should care about cyber. But as Sam said, it started off with, well, what kind of a degree do you have? Are you an engineer? Are you a developer? Are you in product? And then we realized there were more people we could pull into this space. So I joined RSA. Thanks, Sam.
You did it on your own, man. I was there, but I didn't put my thumb on the scale. I wouldn't do it.
And we crafted really cool stories. And I said, why are we telling cyber to cyber folks? These people already know about the space. They're CISOs. They're CIOs. They're CTOs. We're not telling the story right to the right people. And I met some amazing folks along the way, Sam, David Raysupport, Dan Shepherds, Sean Brady. They all gave me a chance. So, Steve, to answer your question, I think, it, as Sam said, it did attract certain folks for a lot of years. But I do think there are a lot more folks out there we should be inviting to join us in this fight, because we could use new ideas. We could knock down tunnel vision. We talked a bit about Rampart when I first joined the call, Steve. We're looking at things in a different way, and we need different lenses. And so when you say, what attracts what type of people, I think there are lots of new people I'd like to bring in, right, Sam?
I mentor students, and I teach. I teach at the undergraduate level at Wentworth, and I teach at the graduate level at Nichols College, and I've taught at other places too. And I have yet to meet a student of any discipline who, if they're introduced correctly to cyber, but it's true of other fields too, who doesn't lean in and find something interesting. And I find some people are just looking for a mission and something that's valuable. So I've seen history majors, I've seen English majors, physics, mathematics, move to cyber and really have a meaningful career. But once they get the bug and they realize that they don't have to accept what other people tell them they can and can't do, that gatekeeping is garbage, then there's no stopping them.
Can I open up a door here? Sam said something to me last week that was amazing. Sam, the wish list job rec in cybersecurity. And I said to Sam, oh, there's a job I really like, right? I've said this a couple of times over the last 15 years. And I go, but I don't have all...
Well, I got so mad at you about this. Yeah,
I don't have 25 of the criteria that they want. This magician, basically, they're looking for a unicorn or a leprechaun riding a unicorn over a rainbow into a pot of gold.
Yeah,
and these cookie cutter systems. Now, I'll start with the first thing is Sam likes to give me grief about it. He's like, just because you don't doesn't mean you don't go for it. But at the same time, these job recs, they're looking for the same requirements, the same things that didn't work before, but yet you should know how to do XYZ, but did XYZ work for you? This is stupid. We need out-of-the-box thinkers. We need people to challenge leadership. We need individuals to be leaders in their space, not the people who check the box that, well, I've got demand gen, I've got lead gen, I've got, okay, but what's your different take on it? And not be afraid to bring good people in. And folks like me, Sam, right? Not being prick. Take a chance on a role just because I don't have all 50 items. Maybe I've got 10, right?
That wall that you have to break down, it is composed of, it's not just got HR fabric in it. It's also got hiring manager fabric in it. It's got institutional fabric in it. And
all of that.
You got stuff that, you know, I want a CISSP with, you know, 4 years experience, and it's like,
yeah, it's sometimes more experienced than the field has been around for. You know, I want somebody who's been debugging Go for 15 years.
So how do you break all that down? Because if you go to HR, they're going to say, hey, what, you know, and then you go to the hiring manager and say, well, you know, I need somebody to do the job. I say, but people that can do the job are actually, this is contradictive of what you're trying to say here. Yeah. But, you know, we're looking for the very best. And it's like, for what? To tell you what you already know?
So this is the BS, right? Like, as if the very best were this cream that is created by a machine that just bubbled, and that's it. That the very best is the person with the perfect resume who makes no flaws. The very, you know, I know said once, you know, I don't want to hire anyone who's been through a breach. And I'm like, what, are you nuts? Like, this was like 8 years ago. I said, they're the ones that know exactly what to do next.
Yeah.
The people that survive are the people that have been through, and the people that thrive are the people that have been and survivors from before, the people that model it out in their heads, the people that have the PTSD sometimes, right?
Sorry, I talked to somebody that had mentioned that they were thinking about hiring Joe Sullivan, and famously from
I know Joe,
and he said, but yeah, I'm not going to hire somebody who's already been through a breach. And he was like, you what?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Serious?
Yeah. Let's bring in the first string players that have never played the game.
Yes.
And by the way, there's nothing wrong with bringing them in, but you got to have a mix of them on a team. You know, this is critical. I try because we're never perfect at it. I try to hire for attitude and for thinking skills and for how people approach problems rather than the perfect skill set. There's this sense that, well, you know, and I saw one CISO criticized for having been a music major. I'm like, are you out of your mind? The same mental skills are used for writing and coding and music and things like that. Why would that be a bad thing if they've demonstrated the ability to do something? If
they took them out,
they solve problems. Yeah.
They took a lot of heat at Experian because the gal who was the CISO,
that's the one I'm thinking of, and it was asinine.
And she was a double music major and a musician. They said, well, but, yeah. She had no cybersecurity experience.
I get it, by the way, if it was brain surgery. You know, she should have had proper brain surgeon training.
Yeah.
But cybersecurity is a thing that you can learn to do on the job, and someone doesn't bleed out and lose their neural pathways. It is a thing that you learn and you can do it as readily on the job as in the classroom, probably better. And it's not to say that people who have a degree suffer at all. It's that's an awful statement. It's this sense of, if I have the paper, now that's the best. No.
Yeah, and then,
when we first did this, by the way, none of us had paper.
Right. As you say, you know, this is the only profession that I'm aware of. White collar profession that I'm aware of that doesn't have an institutionalized educational pathway toward it.
Yeah. It has several stubs of them, by the way.
Pardon me?
It has several stubs of pathways, like the CISSP.
Yeah, but not.
And there's some coding.
If you want to be a mechanical engineer, there's a place to start and a place to finish. If you want to be any STEM sort of person, mm-hmm. there's a place to start and finish. Security, even information technology. You know, if you look at any college program or curriculum, it's by the time you get out, you know, you know, sort of like fundamentals 101, maybe, depending upon, you know, what the curriculum is heavily focused on, and not GRC, for example. Mm. I had one of our team members is a PhD cyber, and she's really good at GRC, but she couldn't tell you anything at all about how, like, operational technology works in the SOC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And but there's no substitute for the person who's like, you know how we got to this point in GRC? It was from these tools that came together and this failed problem and that failed problem and this regulation followed by this regulation. Like, because they lived through it when it happened and they can mentor people as it goes. And by the way, they did go back to school and they took a course and they got a cert and then they go back and they teach one. You want that person. And they may probably, you know what their degree might be? And it could be in English.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it could be in graphic design.
And so this is in marketing, Red, I a similar situation, right? I mean, I don't know any, I've never seen, and maybe there are today, but in the past, I've never seen any, you know, marketing for cybersecurity majors that were like specialized around how do you talk to the CISO? How do you talk to this, you know, mythical creature that that we all want to know.
And it's evident, by the way, when you listen to a lot of the salespeople.
There's a lot.
It's quite evident when you hear the salespeople.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack in that, right? Sam's favorite line, do you have 10 minutes to talk? And they take hours of the time to get on and pitch him something he already kind of knows about, has a pretty good solution already in place. But the problem with marketing is there are way too many chefs not in marketing in the kitchen to start with. The C-suite's now getting involved with marketing. Boards of directors are reaching down into marketing. And you can delete this if it drives anybody crazy. But at some point, we've got to let things resonate, give them time to sink in. We're looking for quick, fast sell. We're looking for quick, fast marketing. Where are my leads? Why aren't there hundreds of thousands?
As if they're entitlements, right?
Right. And why is nobody beating down my door to buy my product, one of 900 in the Boston area? Superb. It's because they're overwhelmed, right? And so we do need not cybersecurity marketing. We need interesting, new, innovative, creative approaches and ways in which to reach audiences and which to get their attention. We need to solve a problem, help someone do a job, not pitch the product. And Sam and I have seen it.
Or if you build it, they will not come, by the way. They won't.
We said on some...
Birnbach and Ogilvy have been doing this for years and years and years. It doesn't matter whether it's a toaster, it doesn't matter whether it's a vacuum cleaner, it doesn't matter whether it's a, you know, a endpoint protection capability.
Right.
It's all the same shit. You're trying to solve the problem in a way that is authentic, that somebody will believe, you know. And so it's not, to me, the process of marketing and messaging and communication is not where the mystery lies. It's like how you bring those things together and attach them to a technical solution.
Yeah, I'd go first here. Yeah, go.
And that is the trick I learned as not a cyber guy. Don't come in and tell that tunnel vision story. Don't pitch. Come in and tell a story that the world needs to know about. Solve a real problem. Real problem, right? My wife goes to Target today and she swipes a card. My kids go out and fill out applications for colleges. Everything we do online now is vulnerable. Everything that they do every day is vulnerable. We live in a physical world. We talked about this as much as we live in a digital world. And marketing has to be able to tell. So we're looking for people who aren't, what's the best way to describe it? In the pattern of continuously marketing the same story. When you go to RSA and you look out over the sea, it's just identity, data, protection.
Oh, no, it's all broadcast. It's all broadcast.
It's the same cookie cutter message the entire floor over. Not a fault of RSA Conference. I love those guys. I'm talking about the companies. And I don't know how many times I've heard a board of directors say, or a C member who shouldn't be in there going, the message isn't right. The message isn't right. The story, the position isn't right. That's not the right message. That's not the
They're not the audience.
Right. You're not the audience. And sometimes when you're really close to the baby, very hard to tell someone baby's very ugly. And we've got to find another way to get it, you know, to get people to, you know, you hear where I'm going with this?
You can complain about the message or you can complain about the results, right? Because if you complain about the results, then it's on someone to be really good at crafting the message. If you complain about the message as if you're the audience, don't be surprised when the actual audience doesn't care. And I'm going to get much more specific for you. I know when a salesperson comes that they don't know me. They really have no idea what my problems are when they come and knock on my door. I also know that they have a product they think I will die without. Now, I'm not dying right now. I'm okay. I might not have the optimal solution that they have, but I'm doing all right. And they know that if I just can be nailed down for 10 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, and look at their PowerPoint, I will not be able to help but fall in love with their solution and buy from them. They know those three things. Now, when that doesn't happen, here's what they do. Where's the leads that I should be getting? Let's amplify the message, which means let's yell louder. Let me tell you where my background. Let me tell you about how we were innovators. Let me tell you about our entrepreneurship. Let me tell you about our secret sauce and special, and we do this, and we have this data structure, and wah, 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 wah. And it's exactly the opposite of what they should be doing. And so let's go back to your earlier question, too. Let's find the perfect person. What we're doing is we're actually looking for somebody with high IQ who's probably got the desire to go and pursue the perfect piece of paper. Now that those skills are very important. The thing that's going to actually sell and lead to success in this capacity, because you got to have beautiful tech, check. Let's assume we've got it. Those 900 companies that Red talked about, they've built amazing things. They're all identical, by the way, but they're all amazing. Now, you've actually got to have a high EQ. You actually got to have people that when you bring them on board can understand the customer and be customer whisperers, not yellers. And they listen and they understand the pain. And they when they first arrive, they don't go, have a look at my PowerPoint. We don't get that. The ones that do, by the way, they do very well. The ones that actually talk very little and they listen.
Why don't we
get successful? Because we reward the wrong thing. We go and throw $200 million at a company to go and hire people that look the same. And they've done it before in a company that had a massive go-to-market machine that demands deal inspection, that demands certain amount of
reach. Why?
Because that's what's worked for big companies. And by the way, it hasn't worked for startups.
No, man, it has.
But it has. No, but it did. It worked for IBM to some degree. It worked for CA. It worked for EMC back in the day. Those machines were big. Now, let's really look at how those machines worked. They had a book of business, and they had the right to go back. And they had a brand. And they had a large tech base. And they could acquire. None of those things exist for a startup.
You know, let's go back further, right? You have a very unfragmented space. Going back, let's go to IBM, right?
How about the old IBM? Let's back in time.
We built an incredible brand. Mm-hmm. Indefensible brand. And we hired sales reps, 80% of whom.
And we'll send 20 into a meeting.
Were okay, and 20% of them built the company. And that is true for CrowdStrike. That is true for Fire, that is true for every successful Zscaler.
Almost every company that has succeeded has succeeded unreasonably.
And then they become the market leaders. They become the market dominant. And then you're telling me that marketing folks look to those guys and say,
but hold on. Steve, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Right.
No, I'll tell you why you can't do that. Let's take 1,000 companies that start out, okay? In the first year, 900 fail. In the next year, 90 fail. In the third year, 9 fail. 1 is left. If you ask that person on stage, why did you succeed? They'll give you a list of things. Now, if you asked all 1,000 4 years before, they would all give you the same list, which means that list isn't the reason they succeeded. It's the after-the-fact list of the thing they believed in themselves, but 999 failures also believed in those things in themselves. So we lionize the one who made it through. And so what do? We try to reproduce what that one person made, and it's not the real root cause.
Bingo, and I want to jump in real quick because this is important. I worked for a company not so long ago that said, hey, we got to get this guy. He's from Palo Alto. He's an incredible sales guy. Just using that as an example. I don't want to, shameless plug. We can say company X, right? And they pulled this gentleman.
He was from a system. But
how come he can't close deals? He was their number one seller. Not the same. Lightning in a bottle. And I'll use a totally non-cybersecurity analogy. Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction. One of the best albums of all time. Ever since then, shit. Absolute shit. But they caught...
But if there's yelling right now because
of... But they caught lightning in a bottle once. Just because Axl Rose did that doesn't mean he made a great singer for AC/DC when he replaced their singer in a tour. He can't. Looking for someone like Red Curry did really well at RSA.
This happens with CISOs, right? When somebody moves from one CISO gig to the next, they tend not to do very well immediately. Because we believe our own mythology about why we succeeded. It takes real humility to figure out why did you really succeed and then realize, I got to figure this out from scratch in the new org. And it's because you're really part of a machine, and the narrative we tell about our own success is largely mythology for all of us.
Yep.
What matters is what you do and how you tackle the next thing, not what you did last time.
Yeah, and IBM is another one. I mean, you're talking about over 70, 80 years that company's existed in one way or another. He was a furniture company. But look.
Yeah, he's like a tabulating machine company. Yeah.
Because they're riding that brand reputation that got them here. They'll be forever in neon lights. But that doesn't mean that they're the best now. That doesn't mean they have the greatest solution.
Or the best at everything. They were good at hardware at one point, software another, services another. Yeah.
Look at Microsoft. We're one patch away from this planet floating off into a black hole. God,
Steve, are we controversial enough for you?
Yeah, you are. That's good.
I mean, think about it. You can't do everything right, but these guys have built these sort of conglomerates, these big organizations with multiple solutions, and they want to know, they're not, you know what I mean?
So, Red, you talked about narratives earlier. We are as a species. We like narratives. We like stories. We like to find the moral and the thing to take away. And VCs are as guilty as this. This is one of the reasons that VCs like to invest in something with a 2 to 3 year chance at a relatively small chance at a big payout, but a lot of those bets is just let them fail. And they like to go with people who've succeeded before because that also breeds more success, probably because they all bet on those people. And that's a system, and it makes money, and it's okay. But we're deluding ourselves if we think that that's a surefire way to succeed.
And all this has been around for a little while.
Yeah, we have.
Brad, you're included. And in spite of the fact that, you know, the buyers today it may resemble you, most of them are becoming sort of the Gen Z category of buyer. And that's a very different person than we've ever been used to selling before. Do you think that we're going to continue to sort of manifest the mistakes of their prior?
I do.
In this regard,
I think they're like us.
We're going to turn this whole thing upside down.
I think a lot of attention is paid to generations. I'll let Red answer this in a second, but I think the younger generation that's becoming the more dominant force now in purchasing and in operations, they're like we were when we entered, and like our predecessors were when they entered. And I'm just saying that generally, rather than naming generations. It's funny how when I look back 20 years ago, the generation coming in now looks like I did then, even though I don't identify with it. And Red, I see you going woo, so I let you talk.
Every generation thinks they invented the F word. I got kids who tell me, oh, I already know. My son tells me all the time, I already know. So dad could have no advice because I was a 70s, 80s kid. But what we have to do, Steve, and this is important, is get out of the way for the next generation. There will be a time where I will step aside and let that next person come up, build the bench. Sam always did that with me, building a bench to let everyone around, raising all boats. Christina Richmond says this. Bring people up around you and build that bench to replace you. Sam, you did this with some terrific folks
they're all past me, which is awesome.
Allie, some great people. And they are absolutely killing it in the space. And Sam goes, hey, look at these guys, rock stars killing it. And I think at the same time, when you talked about marketing a minute, I didn't answer it. We have to stop giving up on the people and the process and the message. We have to let the data speak. I think a lot of the folks who are rewriting stuff for the marketing teams and say, well, that's not working, that's not working, and rewriting messaging and positioning and sales enablement solutions weekly, that's not enough time to let a message resonate. That's not enough time to get the story out there. But I see it happen. I see boards rewriting. I see C-suites rewriting stuff. I think we have to let the data speak. Who's read? Steve, these podcasts that we do and others do, people listen to them because we're just talking about real stuff, about real people with real issues, real subjects.
I think that's because you say crazy things.
But if we were sitting here pitching a product, you might get 3 likes. We got to let things resonate and let this next generation come up. So, like Sam said, they're not going to be much different, but we've got to let them get in. And there's some folks I'm thinking about, Sam, that you offline, we will not mention names, who need to step aside.
Get out of the way.
And leading means enabling the people around you on your team to be leaders, to take that, to take the reins and run with it. And the next generation that comes in, Steve, I hope we empower them and we encourage them. I was once told by a CMO at a company, Sam knows well, Red, you're a visual guy. You're a visual communications guy. You do some speaking. You do some evangelism. But I think I really want you to focus on this. But I had some great ideas. And if this person just believed, you know what? I believe in you. I know you can do this. I know you'll be a rock star. Go do it. Whether they believed it or not, I could have probably shown them something they never imagined possible. But they go with the usual suspects. So I'm a guy who likes to get out of the way, let the next generation of young talent come up. And show me a few tricks. Show me ways in which I got tunnel vision. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so the intellectual argument would say, hey, if we continue to think the same way, if we continue to operate the same way, we're going to get the same result, right? Just like we're doing in cybersecurity, and we continue to defend the same way, we continue to develop technology and apply it in the same way, we're going to get the same result. And lo and behold, that's what we're getting, the same result. So why is it that we're stuck in this moment where we can't seem to get out of figuring out where that sound is coming from? The sound is coming, you know, down the tracks, right? And we're standing there as a target. And I see no movement. We were coming up on RSA, and God bless them. I agree, Red, it's fabulous bunch of people. It's a great conference. But I wonder what the value is. You know, I wonder what the value of all of us going there and milling about.
It's a reunion.
And
junket.
Bullshit. You know, getting drunk every night. What good does that do, or has it?
I by the way, I think that RSA in particular as a conference is not one thing anymore.
Yeah.
So there's parts of it that produce really good value, and parts of it get used for marketing, and parts of it are a reunion. So that it is going through a life cycle of its own. But some of the smaller conferences have risen up to fill the slot it used to, like Black Hat, for instance. But your question is perfectly valid to ask about a lot of the things that we take as staples that have become, and some of it, by the way, I spoke to some folks who were a little younger than say Red and I, and they saw the institutions that we felt were so opening and welcoming. They saw it as gatekeeping. That's why there's a B-sides, right? I mean, and I'm not kidding about that. They were like, we can't get in to speak at some of these things because the program committee keeps leading us out, and it's expensive to go, and we don't have that kind of money, so we're going to another one at the same time in all the cities disappears.
Yeah, exactly.
Same boards with the same proven track record C-suite they place at companies, bringing in their own same teams. I've done this myself. I've been a part of it, right? Marketing CMO comes in, brings own team. CRO comes in, brings own team.
And there's that reflex, Red. They always listen to the advisor who says, you got to bring in the stale one. And they go, you got to bring in the person who knows how to produce the metrics. And you know what? There's some truth to that. And yet they fail. I've seen the ringer brought in who does everything by the book, and the company goes out of business. Seen it over and over.
And RSA Conference is great, but one thing I've noticed is I know exactly where to find 50 to 100 people that I need to catch up with.
Yeah.
I know Marriott, the Marquis. You can go to the W.
Oh, just go park yourself there. Yeah.
Yeah, just go park at the W or the Marriott, and you'll run into everybody you ever wanted to run into that you haven't seen in 20 years. But what I like to do is I like to get out there. I like to meet new companies. I like to see new talent. I like to see new mess.
By the way, the most interesting places are on the fringes of the show floor.
Yes. I like startup.
The cheap area. Seats, as we say. Yeah.
I think we put too much, and I'm going to knock myself. I think we put far too much credibility into our own junk. I think we need to start listening to other people who are new to the space. I'd like to follow new podcasts, new blogs, new writing, new ideas, new thoughts, new people. I like to introduce myself to those, because if I don't, I'll just block myself and I'll never grow. I actually said the same thing. I'm like, what should my next career be? Where am I going next?
You guys all know lots of CISOs in their 40s and 50s, 60s even. How do you, you know, if you compare them to Allie Nellen, for example, how do you approach those people if you're a sales and marketing person?
Do you approach the 40, 60, 60s or the Allie Mellons, you mean? By the way, you know Allie and I know each other really well.
I think you made Allie, but
I don't know. I'm going to say she made herself.
Let me rephrase it. You gave her a tremendous opportunity, and she sees
we work together.
Yeah. So the question is, do you think that you can approach both of those populations the same way, the Allie Mellies and the 40, 50?
So I think it's a question of how. And no, you probably can't do it in the opening salvo, because you can't say much in the opening salvo. I often call it baiting the hook lightly when I talk to marketers and salespeople. Like, you have to be sincere and authentic, but you've got to get and earn the interest and earn a broader conversation. But when you're having the bigger conversation, you could actually allude to the multiple conversations you're having with one person. You can tell Allie, for instance, this is how I'm talking to a marketing person, this is how I'm talking to a tech person, and she gets it. She'll understand that she's an engineer herself formally, right? So the thing is that people are multifaceted. And something that is wonderful about the most recent generation is we're able to bring our whole selves to what we do. People want to know what our hobbies are and our families. And we do work from home now. So when your son or daughter runs into the room, it's no longer anathema, right? That BBC moment where the kid and the wife came into the room, that's the past.
Yeah.
Even on BBC, it should be like, oh, by the way, don't mind my.
Yeah,
there. Like, that's what it should be now. And people want to see that. And by the way, I once heard that when physicists get together at conventions, the number one thing they talk about is their families and vacations. Mm. And so one of the things I do in a conversation is we have conversations about whole self. We talk about security. We talk about zero trust. We talk about vacations. We talk about hobbies. We talk about books. I did a podcast with someone earlier, and we went on a tangent. We probably won't broadcast the rest of it, but we talked about science fiction movies and Dune that came out recently, right? Like, people are as interested in that. And I think that's important. So to answer your question, when speaking with Ali, I have a, you know, I think anybody who's earned the right to come back and talk to her multiple times, he would talk about all of the dialogues. And actually, one thing she'd appreciate as an analyst is, so how is it going trying to have conversations with those different audiences? Because then you're saying, I have this core value prop and I'm trying to reach these audiences. She probably has an opinion, having written so much, on how to reach those different audiences.
Yeah.
I would even say, Sam.
You do too, by the way, Steve.
Sam, how many times do you get bothered with, oh, I looked in your LinkedIn and I saw you're connected to someone. Can you make me an intro? Or, and the truth is, one thing Sam always said to me when I joined was, and I'll just reiterate this very important point. People, you're talking to a person, and cybersecurity is not their light. They go home, they have a drink, they eat dinner, they tuck their kids into bed, they go to school plays, they celebrate their holidays. They have families. They're looking forward to vacation. The truth is, just talk to somebody like a person. If we keep on with the marketing and sales speak and we talk like robots because we've been assigned a role and now we've got to go deliver. Whenever I talk to somebody like, and Sam, you mentioned Ari in the beginning. When I first met Ari, I just wanted to get to know a guy who was friends with my brother. Not a CISO, not somebody to be intimidated by or worried. And he was the friendliest, nicest person.
He is, yeah.
All the time in the world. Sam introduced me to Taylor Lehman, super guy. We didn't talk cybersecurity solutions, products, nothing for the first 35, 40 minutes, and I don't think we covered it at all. The truth is, you make connections with people.
And you know, they'll say that because let me give you an example of, you know, we've had several people here, and I know many in the course of my career, who are just kind of refuse to... you know, button it all the way up, right? They're not gonna take on the whole corporate mantra. And they're not gonna learn word for word what they're supposed to say when they get on the phone. And so what they do is they get on the phone and they say, "Hi, how you doing?" And they kind of bumble through it, you know, and then they maybe make a bad joke, and then they laugh at themselves for what a stupid joke it was, and they're not selling anything while they're.
But they have an authenticity.
They're just trying to say, "Hey,
you want to hear it?
How are you today?" And honest to God, they're the best seller. They are.
I love the genuine salespeople, even the ones who've never sold before, who come in and they are like that. And sometimes I have people who've come in and said, "You said I had someone say you came in came after a podcast and said you would help people in cyber. I'm having trouble breaking in, so I helped them." They said this on LinkedIn. On another occasion, someone said, "Hey, I happen to represent a company that does this, and I'm having trouble with this message. Would you give me advice? I promise not to sell to you." And I did. And it just so happened, I said, "Look, I'm not interested in this right now, but when this comes up, I will call you." So you can do that. It just takes a bit more effort. And you can't necessarily do it in a broadcast way. But if you're a salesperson and you've got a relatively small quota and you've got to find four or five customers, you can do it.
Yeah.
And it's a massive differentiation between what CISOs are used to getting bombarded with.
And it wasn't insincere. The person was genuinely trying to get my perspective on something, right?
Yeah, sure. And especially if you actually understand anything about the company, the person, the product, the, you know, stuff that you're actually representing, which is a whole different problem that nobody does anything about these days either, anyway. Yeah. So I mean, I've never seen a worse prepared and trained group of people in my life than the current batch of salespeople.
You might be about to talk about this. I'm going to turn the table and go a different route. We're talking about people, and we're talking about people who work for jobs, selling to customers, but I'm going the other way. There is a whole generation of people who are tired of working for, I'm going to say it, assholes. We have a lot of people say, "I have a no asshole policy," but do they mean it?
No.
I've got about 30 or 40 people on LinkedIn who've reached out.
Some of the worst ones I know will say that.
The last 2-3 months, there are about 30 or 40 of them who go, "Why is it there's always one jerk in the bunch who's ruining it for everybody? We have to get the culture to really be good, to keep good talent, to keep people happy. empower people to do their jobs every day. Give them the tools that they need. Get out of the way. Stop reimagining their work your way. You're not in the role. Yeah, okay, you're pretty good at it, but trust the expert you've hired to do the job you hired them to do. Let them lead. There's a problem out there, and there is. Sam, would you say it goes back to the bullying conversation? And we're losing talent, Steve. We're losing talent on marketing teams. We're losing talent on sales teams. We're losing developers and engineers who are leaving organizations because you've got some knucklehead, doesn't matter who it is, sitting upstairs, barking down orders about things they don't know.
Especially when they don't know. One of the most impressive things in an executive and a leader is when they admit they don't know something and ask for help. I'm never more impressed than when I see that. And yet it is the rarest of traits in a leader.
So let's talk about that, keeping the assholes out of the kitchen. Sam used to say it was the turd that flows to the top of the bowl. But Steve, I mean, and this is the fun part of this conversation because I like where this is going. But the culture inside fosters the creativity that you need to reach outside. If people are miserable at work and want to run, and I'm talking, we've mentioned several companies on this chat today. I know several people at those companies who say, can you believe what we're dealing with? Managing up is a horrible thing when you treat the people that work for you horribly. And that's something I'm noticing.
I'm notoriously bad at managing up.
There are people who are trying to protect. Sam, would you call it the kingdom? Create their own little fiefdom?
Their little fiefs, yeah, their own little empires.
And they want to make these little worlds where they're the most important person. And God forbid you'd have a creative idea. So to all those folks who listen to this podcast, know this message will get out there. And eventually you will be able to climb up and show the world what you can do.
So there's actually something called the trust equation. I don't know if we've ever spoken about it before. I know you and I have read. There's some things that you can consciously do to build trust. One is credibility and reliability. And by the way, once someone's been in the industry for a while, those are not really an issue, but the things we would only blame. So credibility is, do you know your stuff, right? And you usually do after a few years. And reliability is, do you do what you say? Do you say what you do? Now that comes a hard one, intimacy. Do you like spending time with each other? And by the way, you can't fake that. Like if you keep saying, hey, let's go for a beer, and you don't, it's because you don't want to.
Yeah.
And then the next one is alignment. And this is a subtle one because it means, do you trust the person on the other side wants the same outcome as you? And that could mean a KPI, and it could mean a business outcome. It could also mean that you secretly think they're building an empire, to Red's point. Mm. Like, and you can't hide that either. People know. Mm-hmm. They know that you're secretly doing political maneuverings and you manage up and then you talk to each other because those who really care about the outcome rather than the political maneuvering, there's always politics. There always is. But if politics is your number one goal, all your peers know it. And trust is the killer of problem solving and leadership teams. If you don't have trust, if you have trust, you can solve anything. And if you don't have trust, you can't.
Yep.
No, absolutely. And in fact, that without that, you know, to read your point about culture, is it doesn't matter what your strategy is. Peter Drucker's old thing about culture is strategy for launch, right? I mean, and it happens every time, all the time. I mean, we have our own struggles internally, and that I know tons of companies that they say, "Geez, what's wrong?" And I'm like, "Well, you got rid of those three people, that you wouldn't have that problem anymore." Yeah, so
it's the awkward all hands meeting where it's the, you know, we're all going to get together for the company happy hour on a Zoom or
the unhappy hour.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The awkward silence is for a reason, and there's somebody on the call that everybody's going, that bad person is really horrible, right? Like, there is something, and I've been on several of those at many companies over the years, and I would say that when you've got that kind of a cancer eating at your culture, it's got to be noticed, it's got to be recognized, and it's got to be removed. And then you'll see your teams flourish. You'll see them try new things, new techniques, new tricks, new tactics, new approaches, new stories, new messages, new positioning. And if someone says to you, hey, you know what? I think you could try this. I want to see what you do with it. Here's a task I think you're going to be really good at, as opposed to, here's a task, prove it. I don't know if you could do it, but there's a different way to approach it. And Sam always said to me, Steve, Red, I know you'll be really good at this. I said to him, you think I could be a product manager, not product marketing? You think I can manage a product? He goes, you could do anything you put your mind to if you put everything into it 100%. If we had more people to say that to other folks in the company, You'd have people from different areas of the company trying different parts of development, engineering. Maybe I'd jump into finance. Maybe I'd jump into HR. Why not? Why not?
You got to find the person who knows the secret formula. Like, I can help you with product management, but if you're going into finance or HR, you'd have to find the person that knows what is the essence of it. Like, in product management, it is that you're a defense lawyer for your product, not a settlement lawyer, by the way. They sit down with all the parties and everybody has to leave equally unhappy. No, a defense lawyer says, not only is my client innocent, but it deserves remuneration for mental anguish. And that means the product is going to dominate the industry, and that's their lens.
I'd like to see in the chats when you post this, Steve, someone to say, because Sam, you do a really good job, and I hope I can do this one day, mentoring folks who had different roles who jumped on your teams in the past and became something totally new, something totally different. And I'd love to see people comment about that. I'd like to see people talk about their journey to what they've become. I was once told what got me here necessarily won't get you there, but if you're given the right opportunity with a good mentor, someone to lead you and help you into that new role and to show you the ropes, Lord knows what you could do. Amazing things, I'm sure.
Remarkably versatile.
Down next to cybersecurity, right? I mean, all hands meetings apply across whatever industry you're in, and the same, all the same characteristics exist there as well. Their company. Yeah, if you've got five or six bad apples in a company, and there always are, and, the companies struggle with this all the time.
You know what's worse than simple toxicity, by the way? It's mediocrity.
Yeah.
If somebody just doesn't care and does.
There are a lot of flavors of leadership, too, right? That
yes.
One of the things that I guess I am curious about is that, and I don't want to make this a global or political or, discussion beyond.
Oh, why not? We should go there. Come on.
Beyond the boundaries of our actual purview or capabilities, but it feels to me a lot like the current global situation is very similar to that of like 1920s, 21, 22 during, following quote, World War One rebuilding.
So pre Great Depression, after the Treaty of Versailles,
the struggles in Germany and the, the EMB fall behind, into the, spell of an individual who rose to, become their Führer in 1939, and created this like fucking nightmare for you listen to all of the folks in even in NATO, let alone the WF and the Council, and they're all kind of saying and not saying the same things. It's like I think with the current administration, we're kind of going backwards. I don't mean backwards as a great administration, but I'm not sure this is the right path. And with a new former administration, maybe we would be better off going forwards. But I'm not suggesting we do that either. And so there's a lot of uncertainty about that, apparently. But in the meantime, the United States, and when we had succeeded in World War One, we had the same option. We could have just taken over the world, right? When we succeeded in World War Two, there was only you only had.
Well, it's arguable, by the way, that we sort of did. We just didn't do so in a direct political fashion. That there was a world order that emerged, enforced by our military and the trade. It became safe. Pax Americana. It became safe to trade and ship things in a way that was unparalleled. I mean, even the British Empire didn't have that kind of Pax Britannica. Even wasn't the same thing, right?
Yeah, that's true. The end of World War II, however, we did find ourselves in exactly.
I'm after World War II, but yes, keep going.
Yeah. So, and we said, okay, cool, everybody, we'll help you all build it all, And it's surprising a little bit to me that, you know, we kind of get the pushback now that, well, you know, America's a bunch of assholes and we hate them and all that stuff.
Well, not everyone, but yeah, I hear you.
How do you think this is going to end up? I mean, I guess the question.
That's a huge question. And you didn't want that to be political?
But yeah, I didn't.
So how, which part of that? How do we think? Are you asking a crystal ball question?
Why have you? We had an editorial meeting, I don't know, a month ago. Somebody said, well, you know, nobody's died yet as a result of it.
That's not true.
Exactly. Cyber attack. And I said, that is not true. And many have died.
As many have, yeah. So both accidentally in the case of some plane crashes due to viruses and ransomware with children, and yeah, it's happened in the hospital cases.
And suicide due to some of the online attacks.
Yeah. Well, Josh Gorman did some work that showed the direct correlation between ransomware outages and indirect delays in reaching hospitals for things like diabetes, strokes, and heart attacks, and measuring deaths in the hundreds of thousands. So, not true. But your question is, how's this plays out? Now, which part of it? Because you also want to make it that. Because, you know, elections are one thing, and, you know, protecting, say, democracy and the world order, or, you know, ensuring a peaceful world order and so on is there. But now, also, my master's is in counterterrorism, and I actually teach cyber terrorism. And that is invariably tied into foreign affairs as well. So what part of it are you interested in sort of playing the what-if game with?
If we don't, and that's the we that we've been talking to, and you, me, everybody, people, you know, quotidian people on the street, don't seem to acknowledge or want to acknowledge that cyber threat is an existential threat or that it's a real thing. How do we change that view?
So we seem to have an analogy to FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and we should, but that has also insulated us to the real threat level, that it is actually big. There was an interesting thing that happened with the Ukraine-Russia war, which was the American administration actually threatened medium to high damage from a cyber attack, which we've never seen before. We've seen low to medium. And there was debate about whether cyber war was possible. And I think it's becoming much more credible because the degree of damage couldn't match what the traditional forms of warfare could do. But cyber is a component on the battlefield is significant. And cyber in its own right is going to be able to do progressively more damage. And I think we're beginning to see that. So and it is the defend forward. I think what we say to people is, we've seen enough proof of concepts that we know it could be a disaster. So presume that's the case and do something about it now. Don't wait for the cyber 9/11 garbage we used to talk about. Let's make sure it never happens. Whether or not it could.
I'll add to this because and forgive me because this is a big, great question. Lots of different angles and avenues. I'm going to go with the same. I like the FUD one, but finding 400 million Americans, 400, and this is who we get. I mean, I don't care what side you're on. There are 450. That's ridiculous.
I want Steve King for president.
I do. But I'll tell you, we all too often look for what makes us different and not what unites us. Mm. You go to the World War I comment, World War II, what united us was a common decency, generosity, kindness, empathy, compassion.
And Woodrow Wilson in World War I was also an Anglophile. That helped.
But what I've noticed now, more than ever, is we wear our hearts on our sleeves. This is marketing speak. We wear who we are, and we've been given the world the most incredible platforms to share our opinions. We forgot that they were just opinions. And I'll be really honest with you. Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, all of these platforms give us a voice. Some of us shouldn't have. And then there's the misinformation, disinformation, because we wear our hearts on our sleeves. Nation states, adversaries know it, and they know exactly what buttons to push to start an issue. Let's use my favorite one, which was total horseshit. They want to take the Pledge of Allegiance out of schools. Said nobody ever. Quote me now. No one ever said that was going to happen. You can't Google it and find it. That was not even a recommendation. Yet, an entire political group said they want to take the Pledge of Allegiance out of American schools. No, they don't. No one ever said that. But nation.
By the way, the religious language in the Pledge of Allegiance, I understand, was added in the 50s.
But, it wasn't but the goal. They knew it, how to rile up a base. Mm-hmm. And we got misinformation and disinformation. We've said it in other calls and in other chats. Is an amazing way to steer groups and cause more angst at home, more political issues, as opposed to finding what common ground we share, what decency we still share. And both sides today elevate the fight.
So, Red, I think we could go back to my corporate example, right? Mm-hmm. Like intimacy and alignment. I mean, we don't like to hear the other side. That's intimacy. We don't like to sit down and break bread. So I have somebody, I'm not even going to say which side I sit on. I have somebody sits on the other side of the political spectrum, and we actually enjoy going for beer and laughing and teasing each other, right? But that's rare these days, right? And then alignment. Do we want the same outcome for the country? Because there's people who have a vested interest in telling us the other side is not us, it's them. And I think that's a root problem because there's more us versus them. I'm not going to say that there was a golden age before. There wasn't. I think, though, that it's getting harder and harder for us to see us as one thing. The notion, for instance, here in the United States of what an American is emerged from the Revolutionary War. You know, it was a bunch of colonies. Then we had the idea of being an American. And I think there's a popular movie coming out about a civil war in the United States. And it actually scares me, not because it's plausible, but because it puts the idea in people's head that this country could be seen as a series of polities going to war with each other. I don't love that. I don't, right? There's us, not us versus them. Even when we disagree, even when we have different political ideas, even when we follow different religions, whether we're Christians or atheists or Jews or Muslims, I don't care, right? Like, so we've got to think that we can align to a common outcome and vision, even though we disagree inside the boat about how we get there.
I'm going to plug a company I don't work for. It's called Zscaler. Sam, I'm going to give you a
call. Oh, thanks, buddy. Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to do it, Steve, and here's how we win it. So you asked a question about cybersecurity and how do we get people to buy it, both sides. Some say we don't need it. Some say we do. Technical alliances. We form alliances and partners.
I was wondering where you were going with this.
Stop competing. The idea that, yes, there will always be a competitor out there. Great, sure. Let's find the common ground between companies. Let's give these solutions to organizations who desperately need our help. Let's fight the misinformation and disinformation together. That means SentinelOne, CrowdStrike, Cyber Reason, RSA, Cisco, IBM, come together to get the word out together, to get organizations who aren't inherently cyber-focused thinking about cyber as one of the pillars of their business and why it doesn't slow the business, but it can be seamlessly integrated every single day with these new tech alliances. And Sam, that's the plug I give to Zscaler. You guys do a phenomenal job of that. I see it all the time on social media, how the different companies you're working with. I've watched companies like Ricoh and Wiz. I've watched lots of different organizations out there pull these alliances together. The more we work together to solve a problem and we stop arguing with each other about who's the best at RSA conference, invite a competitor to bring a solution that you might work together on to sell to a
company. I have done that in previous companies, but Zscaler does do it a lot. And I got asked about that today. Someone said, why are these things so open? Why an ecosystem? I said, look, in most industries, you get a commoditization. That means it's available everywhere and the quality is the same from everywhere. And then you get a consolidation. And that's because that's what happens to all technology over time. The difference in cyber, though, is because we have an opponent, we're innovating and therefore we're not commoditizing. And that means there's always that's why we have this long tail of startups, the 900 companies we talked about earlier. They aren't actually identical, but there's this constant need to do cyber better. And so that means that it isn't going to go to a suite anytime soon, no matter what the big players we know who tell you it's all about suites. Because it'll start to breathe in and look like it's going to a suite, and then it's like they can't do the job, and so they'll go into an acquisition mode because those other companies are coming up to fill the gap, and so that means it must be open, and it must be interoperable, and it can't be walled gardens in this space. So any company that says you need a suite and they happen to have a history of walled gardens, good luck.
Yeah,
always that's the warning sign.
All right, allies influence should. Cybersecurity have on anything on the world.
Huh. Well, the biggest problem.
Why should anybody give a shit?
The biggest problem in our industry isn't technical. It's actually lack of alignment with the business. And until we earn the right to sit at the business table. It shouldn't have any. No one should give a shit. And but the fact is that most of us turn up and we pound the table and say risk, 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 when we don't understand the other forms of risk in a company: operations, legal, finance. And cyber is becoming more significant to the business. And so cyber should be talked about at the highest levels and is part of the important to the business. And if your cyber function is too busy doing cyber to align with the company, guess what? They're doing it a disservice. If your team has to earn the right to be there because it's needed to have that conversation there, but you can't do it wrong. That's the hard thing to grok. That you got to get the cyber function to mature from a business perspective. Then it takes what the business cares about back and changes how it does cyber. By the way, this isn't about, I'll give you an example. I advised somebody on how to talk to the board the other day, and they did the exact right thing from a cyber perspective of showing all their controls. And he said, here's my controls. And it was like, I have this, and I have this, and I have this, I have this, I have this, I have this. The board doesn't care. Right? That's not business language. Right? You would not get the CFO doing a presentation on the budget by saying, let me show you all the things I'm buying. Right? Then you wouldn't get sales to say, let me tell you how we're doing from a business perspective by talking about all the meetings we've had. You wouldn't do that.
That's the trick in marketing, Sam. It's business value. What is the value to the organization?
Right. And what you should instead be saying is, you know, here's my risk registry. Here's what it means. And here's the risks I'm focusing on. Therefore, here's how I'm staffing, and here's my programs, and here's where I'm behind, and here's where I'm ahead. And I'm going to keep you up to date on that. That's a different conversation. And then they're going to lean in and attend the other business meetings to make sure that they can consider what the company needs and move the shift or understand new risks. That type of conversation isn't happening in enough companies, because the company that does that, cyber should be talked about everywhere. And if that alignment hasn't happened, that company's in danger.
And Steve, I want to build on this, Sam, because I like you took the company approach. I'm going to take a completely different one that hurt me and my family just recently. There was a ransomware attack on the city of Lowell, Massachusetts.
Where you live, yeah.
123. So politically, get back to the conversation where cyber should fit. It needs to be in the conversation. 123,000 citizens lost their health information, their tax information, their marriage information, their children's information. Our schools got hit again.
The police couldn't write tickets. They couldn't arrest people.
No first responders, no ambulances, no fire, no police. The criminals knew it for a couple of weeks. Here's the thing.
Weeks.
He told the town. It's in the paper, he said, but we had Barracuda. Superb. You know not what you're doing. And you have the lives of 120,000 people. Now, they all...
Let's forget about the quality of Barracuda. That's not an answer.
I'm not talking about Barracuda. I'm talking about the fact that one person thought that's all he needed. Not Barracuda was great. It's a fantastic... I'm not knocking Barracuda. I'm saying we didn't educate enough the people who lead the towns, the cities, the states, or the Fed enough to know that you're going to need more than one thing. And guess what? Now my wife says, Red, you got a Citibank card. I don't have a Citibank card. Oh, no, it's here. You mean just the temporary one? No, the actual Citibank. So I called Citibank security. I went right to security and fraud immediately. And they said, yeah, they've already done a $2,500 cash advance. Hold on. I haven't even called the 1-800 number on the front of the card to activate it yet. How did they take the cash advance? Well, I got my money back. It wasn't mine anyway. They closed the card. I closed the accounts. It's amazing what happens on the dark web when someone dumps your information. Now, retirees can't retire because pensions have been affected. This is a massive problem that there's still 1 year to the... Actually, we're about a week away. 1 year to the day. We're getting really close. It happened last March, April, same.
Same thing happened to our father, who also lives in Lowell. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is it needs to be part of the bigger conversation, because citizens don't know the risk they face when their communities aren't protecting them to the fullest extent they should be or could be. Good news. They still got Barracuda. They've updated it. They got some CrowdStrike. They've got some other solutions in place. But they need to open up conversations to talk about the future of cyber, because it changes every single day, minute to minute. New threats come online, do they not?
Do you think it's a problem? And kind of this is, I'm conscious of the time, so I want to wrap up and out.
Yeah, we talk too much, don't we?
No, never. But we need an episode 5. So I was hoping to cover more of what we covered, what we didn't. As as usual, but we'll do it again in a week or so if you have time. But this is an industry where you kind of wake up every day and you lose. What do you think that
cycle? Oh, I hate that.
I mean, really. I mean, yeah, here we go. We're going in. We're going to do it again. And like we're down 176 to nothing, and they got the ball on our 12, you know, first down. I mean, golden.
It's like what is it, Sam and Ralph, the old Looney Tunes where the coyote or the wolf and the sheepdog punch in every morning.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, he must be eating.
Yeah.
Because like, every day they're punching. So you know the sheepdog isn't doing a good job. Like I was at an IDC conference in 2013, and I think it was Charles Kalaji at the time, might have been Chris Christensen, put up numbers. And it was like 135 billion by 2016. And I'm like, that's a trillion in the last 10 years. Yeah. And the next person on stage, I won't say who it was a CISO we all know, and said, there's those who've been hacked and those that don't know. It's become hackneyed now to say it. But back then, it, you know, I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And I'm you know, sitting high at a C level at a great cyber company. And I'm like, I can't do this. I don't want to be sitting here in 10 years having the exact same thing. Well, I just saw numbers. Security is, what, $220 billion a year? So it's a trillion in less than five now.
Yeah.
That's and what went through my head is I don't wake up to come to work and have someone tell me there's those who've been hacked and those who don't know it. And the root cause of it is the innovation, the adaptation, the resources, the that are at the sharp end, as we say, on the offensive side are greater than on the defensive side.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do we have to do in cyber? We got HR concerns, we've got training concerns, we've got recruitment concerns, we've got compliance concerns, we've got finance concerns, we've got all day long things to do, and we don't have an engineering dedicated function. Most of the innovation is done in most companies, not by a yellow team, but by vendors. That's actually the term. A lot of people don't even know what the term is for red team, blue team, yellow team, right? That's sec DevOps, not DevSecOps. Right. And so, you know what? All of the engineering resources on the offensive side go to breaking in. It's not just that they get to pick the point of entry. They're, if not 100, they're at least 50, 40, 50% dedicated. How much of our energy and defense is dedicated to actual defense? 10%? 15%? Of your typical company, right? Maybe it's of the entire company. What is it? 1, 2%?
Yeah, it's nothing.
Nothing. And so the hope we have is coordination and collaboration, and how good are we at that?
Well, how bad does it have to be before?
Right. Well, we don't. Yeah, but how bad does it have to be before it actually impacts the promise of digital technology? But we don't re-architect. How many people have truly taken a zero-trust approach to what they do?
No.
We don't move our money from CapEx, where we can't touch it, to OpEx. We don't increase the percent of our budgets that are discretionary so we can place bets to innovate. Instead, we put money on brands so you don't get fired. Mm-hmm. This is a problem. So that's why, Steve. I mean, that's why I have this visceral reaction. I don't want the work to fail. I don't. And yet I'm still sitting in audience and those who've been hacked and those who don't know it. Mm-hmm.
Sam, you and I had a great conversation, Steve, but Sam and I talked about 2014, 2015.
It was right after that conference, I think. Yeah.
Went to SSH, great company, communications.
I was on the board.
Now, I'll never forget what he told me. He goes, Red, now we've thought about it from the business side. Sam, you did a great job of articulating it, but I'm going to bring something you told me from years ago. Now I'll say about it from the adversary side, too. So life advancing, life sustaining, and life supporting. We like to protect those things on the good side, call them good, quote unquote. But the same thing for nation states, the same thing for hacktivists, the same thing is true. It's life supporting, life sustaining, and life advancing. Whether that's vaccines, whether that's money to survive, to feed your family, wherever you live in the world, there's a motivation for bad actors. Once we understand the motivation, we can stop pitching product and start understanding what makes you a tempting target. Why would you attack a financial organization, an insurance company, a healthcare company? Why would you attack national defense? There's a motivator. There's a reason. So why are we selling IAM, XDR, EDR, MDR? Why are we selling any of these things before understanding what makes a company interesting? And so what you make, what you create, it's the same thing that the bad guy or the adversary on the other side, the threat, is interested in. Most likely. So we need to stop, pay attention, and understand what motivates both sides. We're building product, but why and to who are we targeting it? And why are they attacking and for what reason and what are they taking? When they stole from Lowell, Massachusetts, what were they taking? Why was that information so important? And what was the outcome? And where did the money go? And what was that supporting? There are all kinds of things in this chain that we have to understand. And until that, we're just, as Sam says, we're just building product and pushing it out.
So
we don't drink our own Kool-Aid, right? The federal government tells us that we need to do more information sharing, more information collaboration.
Yeah.
What you just said, Red, was that we have no idea what that money is for, where it goes, et cetera. And we have no idea about it. There's no visibility into it. We have no visibility into it because the FBI, NSA, and all of the three letters won't tell us where.
If they know.
Assume
so. So, I mean, I'm going to draw an analogy to something else. Notwithstanding the fact that when the lights are out, there's more crime than when the lights are on. So keep that in mind, because the internet is a lights out situation. So it probably raises or lowers the bar for motivation to go out and do crime, right? Let's keep that in mind. But as I mentioned before, I said my master's is in counterterrorism, and we look at why do people become terrorists and how? And so we talk about counterterrorism, which usually means in the moment, what are called hard responses, which is usually military and law enforcement. So typically people think of these harder responses as reactive and controls that you put in place, and they're visible. Right? It's a visible security. It's the SWAT team response, and it's the bomb squad. That's the counter-terrorist response. But there's also something called preventing violent extremism, which happens typically upstream, sometimes downstream of the terrorist incident. How do you prevent people from becoming terrorists? Because it turns out terrorists are not, and this is maybe very controversial, but the clinical research shows they are not any more crazy than anybody else. You can think of it like recruitment into a cult or into a new religion. It's that, and I say a new religion on purpose here, it is that they get recruited, they get radicalized. So now why do they get recruited and radicalized? It's because there are push factors from their environment. They're second-class citizens. They live in poverty. They don't have the ability to achieve something in their lives. They don't have access to resources. There's also pull factors. So if you look at like ISIS's recruitment, or if you look at some of the domestic violent extremist groups, they show you life is better. Life is purer. You can have a paradise, right? So there's push factors. There's a lot of personal factors. And so when you address those, you are addressing societal factors. You are saying, you're gonna do a program that says, let's go and deal with the inequality in a country. Let's go and deal with the downtrodden. Let's go and do programs that give people opportunities. That becomes political. If it's domestic, it becomes really political. If it's international, people go, why should we do that? Well, the answer is quite simple, because on the one hand, you are competing internationally. You are making money internationally. You are doing politics internationally. But you're taking no responsibility internationally. Now, you can say you don't want to do it. I'm fine with that. But this is the price. So I'm not saying you should do what are typically seen center-left and left policies to support or even involved in other people's economies in order to do nation building. I'm not saying you should do that. I'm just saying that in order to get ahead of it and reduce the motivation for people to go and do crime, you can either take a hard right type of response where you say, let's go do treaties and law enforcement and military type things and integrate on the enforcement side. Or you can say, let's go address the root causes that drive people to be cyber criminals. And that is a more typically to the left thing. But if you sit there, cross your arms, go, it just shouldn't be, it's kind of ignorant.
Right. Well, on that note,
yeah, sorry, I went over the top on that.
No, I think it's perfect. Perfect. That was a good
segue. I'm going to say another word.
How's Sam got trouble with it?
Our next session here, which I will shoot you an email about the rest later this week, and then we'll figure out when we can get together again. This is as usual, fantastic, and I can hardly wait to put all this together. And
yeah, the opinionated Curry Brothers.
The views expressed herein are my own and do not necessarily...
They don't represent those of my company.
Nothing to do with my employer. Well, that was great, as usual. We have one more episode we're going to record in the next couple of weeks. I'm excited about it because all good things come to an end, but I'm sure it'll be a doozy, and then we can wrap this up, and you know, a year from now, look back on how crazy all of this seemed. But I think we're largely spot on with every one of our assessments and observations. Now the question remains, what do we all do about it? And it's there for our doing. So I hope that you, the audience, have enjoyed it as much as we have in producing it, and that you'll come back for more, and we can continue this in similar veins as we go along here. So until next time, I'm your host, Steve King, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.